Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Your host, Jared Blanion, here today to do a very special show on labor law. The last year has been really crazy for employers and employees, keeping up with all the new laws and regulations. And today we have a panel discussion about kind of labor law and COVID-19. With us today is Tom Sheehy, Ashley Hoffman with the Cal Chamber, and John Kabatek. How's it going, guys? Thanks for joining the program.
Thanks,
Jared. Doing great.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
To get started, so our listeners at home know kind of everyone and kind of your backgrounds, you know, Tom, why don't you hit us off? Tom Sheehy, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and kind of your background?
Great. Thanks, Jared. So I formerly was on the inside of government for a long time in both the executive branch and legislative branch. And now I've got my own small boutique lobbying firm. We help lawyers with regulatory issues. And we also help California companies that want to contract with the state of California. And I appreciate being on today. Thanks a lot, Jared.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. And Ashley, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thanks so much for having me today. So my name is Ashley Hoffman. I started at the California Chamber of Commerce last August. So during COVID, I handled labor and employment policy as well as workers' compensation policy. Prior to joining Chamber, I was doing litigation, primarily labor and employment law, for the past, 5 years or so at a law firm in Los Angeles, and then also one up here in Sacramento, but happy to have made the transition into the policy world this past year.
Well, and John, go ahead and introduce yourselves and tell a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks so much, Jared. It's a great honor to be here, and I really appreciate the opportunity. My name is John Kabatek. I am currently serving as the California State Director with the National Federation of Independent Business, the NFIB. We represent about 15,000 small and independent businesses across California, about 350,000 across the nation. And we're the states and the nation's leading and oldest small business organization, started right here in the Golden State. This past year has been harrowing for small businesses. It's been an honor to represent those small businesses who are trying to crawl out of the COVID hole and get back on track. And I've been in this role for about 10 years cumulatively. I'm also serving as the president of Kabatek Strategies. We work with and serve a lot of small and independent businesses and organizations that serve Main Street. So great to be here and great to represent the mom and pops out there. And thanks so much to you all for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Just kind of, get started here with our first question. You know, March of last year, everyone was shut down, kind of businesses were shuttered, and it's been kind of a game-changing environment for the business culture, especially small to medium-sized businesses that couldn't keep up. And kind of one of the things that were implemented early on were, mandated leave options, giving employees time in case they were, caught COVID or needed to seek childcare. Additional time off, mandated leaves. And a couple of those have been extended. How are new leave mandates kind of infecting employers? And what if more mandates are enacted? How are these affecting business?
Sure. I'll start us off if that's okay. As you mentioned, over the past year, there were a number of leaves that were mandated on businesses of all sizes. We had a first round of COVID, related leave up to 2 weeks, and that was a paid leave. Even though there were, some tax credits that could be taken from the federal government to cover part of that, California then implemented one that applied to large businesses. We then had Cal OSHA, which instituted an exclusion pay leave for anyone who had COVID or anyone who had been working with someone who, it turns out, had COVID. And then you had the expansion of the California Family Rights Act starting January 1st, which was up to 12 weeks of leave. It used to apply to larger businesses with 50 or more employees, and then it was modified to apply to businesses with just 5 or more employees. So there were quite a few new, leave mandates placed on employers, both paid and unpaid. And as businesses, I think we're really struggling to make ends meet. That was, pretty difficult for them. And even if there was maybe a tax credit, that tax credit, right, didn't come right away. This was actual capital that they were having to pay out in the moment. And, there were restrictions on the ability to, say, asking for documentation, and so employers really you know, didn't have a lot of discretion, you know, over the leave. And then in March of this year, we saw a second round of COVID leave that was mandated for all businesses with 25 or more employees. You know, I think that kind of more than anything, from anecdotally what we've been hearing through a lot of employers who were just, you know, trying to get back going again. And that leave included even more reasons that you could use to take the leave. And so I think kind of an amalgamation of all of that together, you know, just made it a little difficult for employers who were trying to get back on their feet to be able to do so. A lot of them, you know, of course, wanted to help out employees, especially those who've been touched by COVID, but trying to kind of balance that with just keeping jobs available in general was, you know, pretty difficult.
Yeah, right. John, what have you seen from kind of the NFIB on this issue?
Yeah, no question. I mean, this, even before the horrible pandemic, you know, touched upon California and the planet, small business owners here in California were already facing the highest taxes, the highest cost of doing business already, you know, and then take a look at this past year just alone. I mean, we found here at NFIB and just in general on our surveys, 25% of our members were forced to close their doors. Wow. Talk to the Restaurant Association here in California, more than one third of the restaurants had to shut their doors and they're still trying to bounce back. But even before that, we had a state that was the highest taxed, most regulated, had the most onerous rules for businesses. And I think when it comes to the employee leave issue, there's a lot of misconceptions or notions that are asserted that are just simply patently false. I think first of all, I think there's often this perception or this assertion that California employers don't offer leave programs or enough leave to their employees. Where in fact, California has the most generous leave programs in the country, upwards of 13 or 14 leave programs just for California employers to provide employees alone. I think the other part is that we actually find that people often say is that small business owners aren't providing leave to their employees. In a survey that we recently did at NFIB with our research foundation, we found that 73% of small business owners said they were offering their full-time employees some sort of paid time off. But 92% were against required paid medical leave because of the cost. And then I think the third part of it is that that there's a sense that this just won't be a burden and bear a burden on employers. And at the end of the day, this is just a new cost. So we just feel like more unnecessary leave programs will just make bad matters worse, cost employers more, and make it that much more difficult to get people back in the workplace. And then last but not least, it's that law of unintended consequences. The cost of leave goes up when a small employer has a very, very thin operating margin. They're going to be forced to have to do something. And typically that instead of raising prices will probably be scaling back on who? The worker hours, their benefits, their wages, or their positions altogether. So, or have to shut their doors. So we should actually be paving the way. And in a state that already has the most generous programs, this one just seems unnecessary and ultimately devastating.
Yeah, just to kind of build on something that John said, you know, some of the rhetoric we were hearing around the expansion of the 12-week Family Rights Act, you know, is this leave is unpaid, it doesn't cost the employers anything. And that's not true. You know, if you have an employee out for 12 weeks, of course, that does cost something to your business as far as finding a replacement for that employee. And so, you know, sometimes that was something I think that was used, you know, in support of that bill, but definitely, you know, there is always a cost, even you know, as far as unexpected absenteeism is been shown to cost businesses, you know, a couple $1,000 per year per employee. So definitely is a cost, even if it's an unpaid leave.
Yeah, hey, Jared, just picking up on both what Ashley Hoffman said and John Kabatek, I agree with everything they've said. My main client that I monitor and work on labor laws on is the California Landscape Contractors Association, which is an association of about 1,200 mostly landscape contractors, but also designers and other vendors that work in that industry. And they're mostly small businesses. So our views align with NFIB, but I want to double down on one of the points that Ashley made on this bill that passed last year, SB 1383, by now former, since she retired, former Senator Hannah Beth Jackson, which expanded the California Family Rights Act, which is a version of the federal act. It expanded it by taking the threshold down from 50 employees or more all the way down to 5. And that's for 12 weeks of protected leave. It's not necessarily compensated, but it's protected. And if you think about it, a small employer with 5, 6, 7, 8 people, having somebody out for 12 weeks is a real issue for them. Small companies like that don't always have the ability to cross train. Because we passed AB 5 a couple of years ago, making it hard to contract out for temporary work. If you want to fill that position temporarily, it's very difficult to hire a new employee on a temporary basis like that. Oftentimes you have to extend premium pay to get them to come on board, and then they'll jump ship at the next best opportunity that comes along. So we've really made it difficult for these small employers. And as far as I know, California is the only state in the entire country that lowered the threshold for the Family Leave Act all the way down to 5 employees. Now, despite that, and by the way, that bill was heavily, heavily lobbied, and it just barely passed. I mean, a lot of moderate Democrats laid off that bill or voted no, but there were still enough votes to get it to the governor, and the governor lobbied very hard for it. So despite everything that we hear coming out of Sacramento about what they're doing for small businesses and for business, the passage of that bill was really a shot across the bow for a lot of small businesses in California that are struggling. And then, as Ashley mentioned and John also alluded to, you know, despite that historic expansion of leave through SB 1383, this year when the California legislature assembled, they started introducing even more leave bills with new leave mandates. New leave mandates expanding paid sick leave, new leave mandates expanding and creating bereavement leave, new classifications for why you could take leave under CFRA, under the California Family Rights Act. I mean, there just seems to be no end to how many leave bills the California legislature is going to introduce. And at some point, if you're a small employer, you look around and you go, my God, how am I ever going to comply with all this? And just one more thing while I'm on my soapbox, a lot of these small companies, they don't have a full-time human resource director. It's basically the owner of the company who's, you know, trying to get the work lined up, trying to get the right teams put together to go out and do the work, trying to take care of their finances, their accounting, and all what in their spare time, they've got to, you know, read through, you know, piles and piles of regulations to make sure they're not violating any laws. And God forbid, if they do violate a law, then they're going to get dragged into court under the Private Attorney General's Act or under the Fair Employment and Housing Law. So it's a real landmine out there for employers. And I don't believe that we're doing enough to simplify some of these challenges that businesses and particularly small businesses face in the state. And so I think there's a lot of room for more discussion in this area.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Tom.
And I would say in a sad twist of verbal irony here, you know, as I'm thinking about this, you know, the more and more that our policymakers continue to pile upon bills having to do with leave, the more we're hearing small business owners talking about wanting to leave. Right. So it's just an unfortunate, it's just one more, I think, dagger that is making it difficult for them to want to survive here. And while we're already, again, providing the most generous program of leave opportunities for employees.
I guess a good point. Just kind of, I guess, piggyback on Tom's kind of points up there. Kind of, Ashley, how is the implementation specifically of SB kind of 1338, Camley, affecting kind of employers in the state?
Sure. So 1383, you know, I think what the biggest piece of it, right, is what we've talked about. It expanded to small employers, so just 5 or more employees. But the other big piece of it is that it expanded the definition of who or the list of family members for whom you can take leave to care for. And the California Family Rights Act has a federal counterpart, the FMLA. And so by expanding that list to now include grandchildren, grandparents, siblings, to make the definition of child apply to a child now of any age, you had a department from the FMLA. And so where the laws used to run concurrently, so say you took 12 weeks off to care for a parent, right? You essentially exhausted your rights under both statutes because they don't match up anymore. An employee could, you know, take 12 weeks off to maybe care for a newborn child under baby bonding, and then also take 12 weeks off to now go care for a grandparent. And, you know, so that was something that we brought up, right, that you could now, in theory, take off 6 months of leave. And we actually are seeing that happen. We have, you know, anecdotally have members who've had employees use time off under both statutes. And so I think that's, you know, throwing kind of a lot of employers for a loop as well, is now having to monitor, you know, under both statutes to see, okay, if you, even if you haven't maybe exhausted under, you know, the CFRA, you under FMLA and vice versa. So I think, you know, that's really been the biggest adjustment that they've had to make. A lot of them are really still figuring it out. I think, you know, in talking to members and kind of our speculation is that I think we're going to see a little bit more of what are more evidence of what are the concerns as we get out of COVID. You know, people are still working remotely, right? Starting to come back to the office. So people, you know, maybe are not having to essentially use that leave as much as they would have in a time where we all were back at work. So yeah, I think employers right now are still just kind of trying to figure it out. You know, we've hosted webinars on it. I know the Department of Fair Employment and Housing has hosted webinars on it, and many law firms has as well. I'm trying to kind of educate workers. So I think employers, you know, we're really trying to kind of still crawl their way out of COVID and all the regulations that came with that and the new leaves that came with that, and are slowly again trying to just really figure out CFRA and how it departs from the FMLA now.
Hey, John, just picking up on what Ashley just said, she talked about they now have, the Cal Chamber at least now has members who employees that have taken advantage of the difference in the state and federal Family Leave Act. And instead of just having 12 weeks, could have 24 weeks, which is almost 6 months. This is a point that was driven home last year multiple times during a lot of meetings where SB 1383 was being discussed and it was being lobbied. And the Cal Chamber and other members of that coalition trying to amend that bill repeatedly pointed out that because of the way that the bill was structured, that this could happen. And the author of that bill poo-pooed it. Other members of the legislature poo-pooed that and said, oh, that's not going to happen. And here it's happened. Okay, so the reason why I'm bringing that up is because I think that sometimes these legislators, even those that maybe are trained attorneys and practice law, if they haven't actually run a business and signed the front of a check and had employees they were responsible for, they may not really understand the full consequences of what it is they're doing. Because for them to have poo-pooed this business about employees right, now getting 6 months off under federal and state family leave, to have poo-pooed that. And now we're hearing that there, in fact, are California companies that are experiencing this. It doesn't just drive home the point, it slaps everybody in the face and said, you know, we really set ourselves up for a real problem here.
Very true. And, you know, Tom, I think if there is a real silver lining to this very terrible past, you know, 14, 15 months, I think that policymakers on all sides of the aisle have really realized that when small to medium businesses are suffering or prosper, the public services, our schools, our roads, our highways, our hospitals, our workers, our state workers are directly proportionately impacted. So I think they've realized, hopefully, after looking at this year, hearing from their constituents that, you know, to your point, even though they may or may not have signed the front of a check ever, that they do understand with this terrible crisis how much our public services are impacted by the tax revenues that are generated through our number one job creators, mom and pop, small businesses. Every business counts, though. Ashley and I talk about this often, is that if larger businesses, medium, small, they all need to be successful, because at the end of the day, working families and California services will benefit if they are thriving.
Really, and I guess that's a point to kind of differentiate. Is I guess how are these, you know, mandates affecting small business versus large businesses differently? You know, obviously large businesses have more resources they can dedicate to this stuff, but you know, Ashley, what are you seeing out there? What, you know, the difference in business size and these mandates?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of things, or a lot of times in legislation, we see there's kind of an assumption that if you have more than a certain number of employees, you can take on any mandate that we throw at you. And it's, you know, it's a pretty broad generalization. And I think in the legislature, there's oftentimes this idea that, you know, under 25 or under 20 is small, right? But in the bigger general business community, really, you know, a small business is usually something like under 100 or 150, you know. a restaurant that has, you know, 50 employees, right, it can still be a very small business in a small restaurant. And, you know, so sometimes I think there's maybe not as much of a realization as to what this mandate truly means for a business that's just above that cutoff, you know, whether that's maybe 52 employees or something like that. And, you know, as we've seen, just I think in my experience as a litigator, but then also with some of our members, is, you know, COVID hit all businesses. It wasn't like it didn't touch the big businesses. That's not true, you know, or it had, you know, people I've represented, right, that have very thin profit margins, and they have a lot of, you know, employees, but that doesn't necessarily always speak to their, you know, financial viability. And I think sometimes they just kind of get, you know, if you have more than 100 or more than 50, you just get lumped in with these multinational corporations that have thousands of employees, you know, and it's just not really a good comparison. So, you know, and we did see this year some efforts to impose, you know, mandates on, you know, bigger businesses, and a lot of those did get held up, you know, didn't pass that House of Origin deadline. And I think part of that was some of those, you know, bigger businesses coming out and saying, hey, like we are also struggling, or, you know, or these, you know, mandates don't work for XYZ reason and things like that. And, you know, we've heard anecdotally, right, too, from businesses of all sizes that when, you know, the second round of COVID basically came out this March, I mean, we had some businesses say, hey, I used to offer other benefits and I had to stop because I now have this 80 hours a week of paid leave that I have to give every employee, and I just can't afford to do it all right now, yeah. Which hurts the employees, you know. We've heard from one company that was like, I used to help subsidize some childcare, and I can't afford to do that right now. And employees would have rather had that versus this 80 hours. But unfortunately, with some of these mandates, it takes away the flexibility that businesses have to really design benefits, you know, packages and leave programs around the employees and what their employees actually want. So, yeah, I think, you know, these policies affect businesses of all sizes and sometimes affect businesses, I think, in ways that the legislature may not realize.
I'm sure John's going to want to say something also, but I just want to point out that to restate something that Mr. Kabatek said earlier, which is, of course, small employers want to provide benefits and leave time for their employees. But when these mandates come down on them that are costly, they don't have any choice really except to either hold positions open or eliminate positions or raise prices on their customers. And I think that a lot of times legislators aren't sensitive at all to the cost factors of regulations. If you go talk with, you know, senators or assembly members and say, well, these things are very costly, I don't really think that moves the needle at all on how they feel about the policies that they're promoting. But if you tell them that you're going to have to lay off 25% of your workforce, I think that gets their attention. Right. And I don't think that we have a good enough connection I don't think we make a good enough connection when we're making our policy arguments, speaking with policymakers, elected officials, that some of these labor mandates, leave mandates, and other labor law issues that impose these costs on employers, that doesn't just come out of the employer's pocket. That comes at the expense of existing jobs, or it comes at the expense of creating new jobs, or it comes at the expense of having to eliminate discretionary benefits. Because at some point, if you're running a business, you got to balance the books, and you got to do it any way you can, or you go out of business.
Tom raises a really good point. And I think, you know, just hiring employees is such a challenge right now. You know, NFIB does a monthly small business optimism index, took a dive for the first time in 4 months this last month, really telling us that small business owners are still very uncertain about the future. Even though we're coming out of this, or appear to be a lot of uncertainty. We have a record high 48% of small business owners that reported they have unfilled job openings. I mean, they're eager to hire and keep skilled qualified workers. It's just not happening at the pace we hope to yet. Right. But 27% do plan on creating new jobs in the coming months, which is up 6 points since the previous month. And then we also found that 57% of the small business owners basically said they've had few or no qualified employees that they could find for job openings. And that's up about 3%. So what it's telling us is employers want to bring people on board. They want to hire. but they need to be sure that the laws, the regulations, the rules are going to make it more opportune for them to hire and get people on board. And we also need to make sure that we don't have systems like our unemployment payout system, which is incentivizing people not to get back into the workplace. Fortunately, that's going to expire in September, and we'll hopefully see more people in the four doors of a workplace.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of something I wanted to talk to you guys about is right now we're hearing from a lot of businesses that, you know, they need help. There's lots of job openings, but, you know, right now nobody really seems to kind of want to work. What are you guys kind of seeing and hearing out there from your member businesses about, you know, finding employees and, you know, staffing up to kind of meet the demand of the economy reopening?
Hey, I think on the unemployment insurance benefit issue, it's a real issue. And it is absolutely true that employers across the board are having a difficult time hiring. I mean, you can't go anywhere. Well, you can't go anywhere in Sacramento County where I live without seeing help wanted signs. I mean, they're everywhere. And that crosses over to another issue I think we really should touch on because it affects all the employers in the state. And that is the status of the unemployment insurance fund here in California. You know, the UI benefit saved a lot of employees from a lot of financial train wrecks. It allowed them to continue to pay their bills and buy groceries and have income while they were laid off essentially and at home. And that's a good thing because that helped save a lot of families from a lot of suffering that otherwise would have occurred. But the impact of that is because we completely drained the unemployment insurance fund in California. That is a fund that is funded. Its revenue stream comes from payroll taxes that employers have to pay for every employee that they employ. We had to borrow $21 billion, that's billion with a B, $21 billion from the federal government in order to pay all these benefits. Now, all that borrowed money's got to be paid back. And if we don't pay it back within a certain time frame, automatically, it won't take an act of the legislature or an act of Congress, but automatically, the payroll tax rates will go up, and they will go up dramatically. For example, right now, every employee that an employer has, they're paying about $42 a year per employee in unemployment insurance taxes. If we don't pay back the $21 billion that we borrowed, that $42 per employee could go as high as $420 per employee, or a tenfold increase. That's a huge ticking time bomb for employers here in California, for all employers, but especially for the smaller ones. And so the question is, what can we do about it? Well, the nonpartisan legislative analyst says that we've got a $38 billion budget surplus. And I think we need to encourage the legislature and governor to do a lot more than they have considered doing to pay down that $21 billion deficit. I think Governor Newsom proposed $1.1 billion in his May revise. The legislature really hasn't accepted that. They came back with another proposal that is not as good as what the governor had. And in the meantime, it's every single employer in this state, large and small, public and private, they're going to be stuck paying this back. And that's going to cost us jobs and it's going to cost some small businesses to shut down altogether. So that's another issue out there looming over us that's tied in with the whole labor market, is this unemployment insurance fund issue.
Yeah, that was one topic. You know, we were concerned about what Tom mentioned about paying down, you know, that debt. So one of our, you know, recommendations this budget season was to use some more of the surplus to help pay down that debt, as Tom mentioned.
No doubt about it. Tom, you sound like somebody who might have worked at the California Department of Finance in a previous life. and so well said by both of you. I would say that, you know, the governor has made it clear this year repeatedly that with our coffers as flush as they are, that he will reject any notion of taxes. If a bill that makes it to his desk that is even smells like taxes, he will veto it. And we're heartened by that. But we also find that, you know, with our coffers as flush as they are, with the multi-billion dollars that we have here, there should be an investment more than that small amount so that we can make sure that there aren't taxes imposed upon small businesses in the future. Because that is exactly the pathway that will happen here. And small businesses, make no mistake, will be having to incur that. So while we're in good times and rejecting taxes, we should make sure that we're paying down this debt. As Tom and Ashley mentioned, so that we don't have to look at taxes in the future. And I know that that will be met by voters with great resistance. So let's take care of it now. Let's get out of the woods now.
It makes sense. You know, this is something you brought up, kind of, you know, the $400 per employee. Kind of, what does this look like in other states? And are there states taking on such a burden? And are their kind of unemployment taxes as high?
Well, there's a handful of other states in this country that are probably competing. I don't know if that's the right word, but competing with California on this issue. But I think that California is certainly in the top three, or possibly at the top, in terms of the size of its liability. I'm not up to speed on the specific steps that all the other states are taking. I mean, we're talking New York, New Jersey, Illinois, probably a couple of others that have challenges with their unemployment insurance fund. But I don't know where they're at in enacting mechanisms to pay that back sooner rather than later. I think in California, you know, since the tax increases will be automatic and nobody will have to pay for them, I think there's a feeling amongst some elected officials that they, well, maybe if we don't do anything, we don't have to worry about it because it'll just self-correct. And that's a really, boy, that's a tough position to take, because that just comes right out of the hide of small businesses. And as I said, it's going to cost jobs. So, you know, there's no doubt, Jared, that this is a problem in some other states, but I think California, for a lot of reasons, you know, because of the size of our population here, it's pretty unique, the size of and magnitude of it.
You know, it's interesting that I guess the past year has been really trying for employers not only to keep up with the changes in the law, but changes in regulation. You know, agencies like Cal OSHA, you know, coming up with different safety, occupational kind of hazard issues. And I know right now everyone's trying to gather a plan on, you know, getting back to work, bringing the business back, bringing employees back in. You know, how are you guys helping your clients and businesses in general kind of, you know, get back to normal and develop a plan on, you know, how to have employees back in person and deal with these masking and vaccination issues?
Well, look, I'll just speak up. You know, the Landscape Contractors Association, I'm sure, as many, many employers, and I know that there are specialists that provide that advice at the Cal Chamber, and I'm sure NFIB has its own resources. But at the Landscape Contractors Association, who I work pretty closely with, you know, they've got people that are full-time looking at those issues and providing the best guidance and best practices to all of the members on how they can comply with the law. The emergency temporary standards that were adopted by Cal OSHA got really, really confusing this year, because there was a period in time where it seemed like every week they were changing what they were saying and changing, you know, what the regulations were ultimately going to become. And they were out of line with what the Center for Disease Control was saying. And they were even out of line with what Governor Newsom was saying, who really is their boss, if you think about it. So it's been really, really confusing. We're just now starting to get some clarity, because last Thursday or last Friday, last week anyways, Cal OSHA finally adopted a set of rules that are very close, or much closer, in alignment with the CDC and with what Governor Newsom's been saying. So it's been a source of a lot of confusion and a lot of headache to all employers in the state trying to follow the emergency temporary standards. But I think we're just now getting to the point where that dust is settling and employers, both large and small, are starting to figure out what's involved. And, you know, when do they have to provide an N95 respirator, when they don't, and who is required to wear a mask and who isn't, and so on and so forth. That's starting to become more clear now.
So at Cal Chamber, you know, in addition to our policy team, we have, you know, our HR California team. That's a group of employment lawyers. They are really the heart of, you know, Cal Chamber. They continuously, you know, monitor all of these issues, like all the Cal OSHA regulations. They put on webinars. We have an HR California webpage that our members can have access to that has, you know, continuously updated blogs and resources. We also have a hotline that members can call and talk to some of our employment law specialists. So we really do try and do a lot of outreach, you know, to all of our members. We have over 13,000 in the state, just to, you know, continuously monitor all the updates. And we definitely had, you know, a member of our policy team, Rob Mutri, who was tracking Kaloshev and involved in a lot of those conversations very intimately over the past, you know, year plus too. So definitely just, you know, trying to do a lot of proactive outreach to members and make sure that they're updated. And if they have questions, you know, that we're there to help them out.
Similarly here at NFIB, we've been doing webinars. We've been fortunate to have people at every level of government speaking to our members, our small employers, from the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development to Labor Department, to folks at the federal level, to local folks, and really helping to make sure that small employers right now, what they need to do is really understand the letter of the law. And as Tom was mentioning, there's so much conflicting, confusing rules and regs that people are having a difficulty understanding it. So first and foremost, it's helping to make sure that these small business owners, medium and large business owners, understand the laws in California so that they are compliant. And I think that's part of the reason we have not seen this immediate rush to rehire or hire, because people are still wanting to make sure they're not going to be liable and subject to lawsuits by doing the wrong thing.
Interesting. Well, you know, the past year has been just, you know, head spinning for a lot of small businesses, and, you know, appreciate your guys' time and advocacy on these issues and try to clarify for our listeners at home and you know, business owners who might be listening. Ashley, could you kind of give some information about how to learn more about kind of the chamber and kind of where to get some of this information, how to sign up?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we do have a website that'll take you, you know, not only to our then HR California page that you can log into if you're a member. You know, we have a variety of levels of membership, you know, ranging from kind of basic to something up to like policy member that interacts more kind of with us and our team. But, you know, for a certain amount, you know, you can get access to all that information I talked about, like the hotline, the kind of guide, the HR guide that goes through forms that you need, how to deal with certain issues that might come up in the workplace. So it's a really, you know, valuable membership, I think, if you are a business owner or HR professional or something like that. And then, of course, you know, we also do every year on our website post our positions on all the bills. We actually also link to all of our letters. So if people are ever interested, you know, in the positions we've taken on a bill and why, that's all available online for free to check out as well. So, you know, if anyone's interested in our position on a certain issue, we'd just direct you to go there. Have, you know, always, please, people can feel free to reach out to me as well. I'm happy to talk to folks by phone or email if you know, they have thoughts or concerns on a bill too.
Okay, great. And John, what about folks who want to get more information on the NFIB and some of the work you guys are doing?
Absolutely. Thank you so much also for the opportunity to join this great group today. It's been a great discussion. The best way to get involved with NFIB, and again, we are the leading small business advocacy organization. We encourage people to be involved in various groups, but we are the one group that's speaking for specifically for small business. And the best way to reach us is nfib.com, nfib.com. There is a California page you can go to find out specifically the issues that we're dealing with, the legislative issues, many of them where we're collaborating closely with the chamber and many other groups and the Landscape Contractors Association and many others. But go to our nfib.com, and then there's a California page. You'll find out about member benefits, great ways to save money as a small business owner, certainly great opportunities to be involved. We've got National Lobby Day happening this right now. We got a lot of things underway, so we're really excited, and there's great ways to be spoken out as a small business owner, and encourage people to get involved.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, guys, for taking the time and educating us all on what's going on this year. I know it's been confusing for lots of businesses, and thanks for coming on here and kind of sharing the struggle, and look forward to hopefully talking about some exciting issues maybe later this year, see how it's all ironing out.
Thanks, Jarrett.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jared. Appreciate it.